Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading this morning from Canto 2, Chapter 4, Text number 19. And very interesting verse again with nearly a 3-page purport. So we'll just focus on the message here. Yesterday we heard the very famous verse where Shukadeva Goswami is describing persons from all different backgrounds, different nations, different cultures, different apparently unqualified positions can achieve perfection through this process of devotion when it's given to one through the association of qualified devotees. Unqualified people can become qualified for perfection by that method, and there's not a prerequisite. Anyone is eligible. Going back a little bit further, because it connects with this morning's verse, high grade activities, that is, things that accelerate piety, elevate one to the mode of goodness, and bear the fruits of piety, austerities and charities and cultivation of knowledge and Vedic sacrifices and all kinds of nice good things, achieve their culmination in surrender to the personality of Godhead. And without them, they bear no real fruit. No real fruit, meaning of the realm of sat, transcendental fruit. They bear their material fruits, but they don't bear transcendental fruit. But when they're connected to the personality of Godhead through surrender, then they do. And they help lead one to that position of ultimate surrender. So now this verse connects with that, those two ideas. The translation reads, he is the super soul and the supreme lord of all self-realized souls. Because he's the super soul in all species of life. But then there's a particular regard for the super soul who's within the heart of every living being, for those who are devotees. The self-realized souls, see Paramatma as their master. He's their Lord. He's their everything. He is what they're absorbed in. He is their shelter. Meaning, or the implication is, that there are those that don't have that regard. Still he remains this Paramatma, the super soul, overseeing everything, permitting everything. Upadrashta Anumanta. But those who are self-realized see the Lord as their master. Next, so these are qualities or qualifications of the Lord. He is the personification of the Vedas, religious scriptures, and austerities. Then, He is worshipped by Lord Brahma and Shiva and all those who are transcendental to all pretensions. And almost the entire purport and spilling over into the next purport is that section. Those who are transcendental to all pretensions. Prabhupada writes in the purport, the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, although the Lord of all followers of different paths of self-realization, is known only by those who are above all pretensions. This is what this sentence, introductory sentence of the whole purport, and it's very important, it connects this verse with the previous subject matter. The previous subject matter is there are different processes that people follow for elevation besides pure devotional service. In this world there are other processes. In the Vedas it indicates there are other processes. He's the Lord of those other processes. But they don't realize him except through the process of devotional service. That is, their understanding of who the Supreme Lord is. For example, this is discussed in the purport, for those who are following karma kanda rituals, how do they realize him? He's the dispenser of what they want. He's their order supplier. In Karmakanda rituals, the very beginning of the ritual, universally, is of some Sanskrit prayers acknowledging who is the Lord of the sacrifice, the Bhokta of the Yajna, and Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayan or Vasudev, something, some of the names of the Supreme Personality Godhead are mentioned, they're invoked, and then they go on. They go on to the Yajna where it's the Deva is propitiated, Ganesh is called upon to remove the obstacles, but all of that is presided over, and the Bhokta, the predominating person of the whole Yajna, is the Supreme Lord. That's Karmakanda rituals. So the point that is being made, such persons don't realize the Personality of Godhead by that method. They're acknowledging him and then they just move along. Like, all right, well, and off we go, because we want something. We want the fruit of this yajna. Yes, Deva this and Ganesh that and fruit of the yajna. We're being polite, but you know, Hari Bol, and yes, yes, and off we want it. So by that disposition, one may become elevated in the modes of nature, but one won't realize the Personality of Godhead. So although the Supreme Lord is the Lord of all followers of all different paths of self-realization, he is knowable only by those who are above all pretension. So the Sanskrit is Gata Vyalikai. Gata Vyalikai. He repeats the phrase several times, and again into the next purport, Gata. Vyalika, above pretensions. In the next purport, it's above, it's free from misconceptions. Again, in this purport, Prabhupada quotes Srila Jiva Goswami saying Gata Vyalika refers to the Projita Kaitava phrase in the first canto. You know the verse? Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam. First canto, chapter 1. So, this second canto verse is expanding on that Projita Kaitava. Projita Kaitava. Kaitava means cheating or deceptive or pretentious dharma, where one thing is being indicated but actually it's another thing. So it's deception or duplicity. Say one thing and really another thing is your intention. So dharma pochita gaitavotro paramo nirmatsaranam sitam. The phrase means that this Bhagavatam Vyasadeva is proclaiming, ba, 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 this Bhagavatam will only speak about paradharma. We will not speak about anything else. Ba, 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 ba. So it's announcing, proclaiming. Any kind of cheating religion we're not speak about. Because, so the statement then is, Jiva Goswami is connecting that first canto message with this one. Anything that indicates less than full shelter of the personality of Godhead, that's pretension. So those that take up those paths that are Vedic but aren't fully paradharma, the supreme occupation of a living being is to be absorbed in service to the personality of Godhead. If that's not the message, then it's pretension, and only those who are above pretension achieve realization of the personality of Godhead, and that means they factually achieve self-realization, because self-realization and God-realization occur simultaneously. What's self-realization without God-realization? Who am I apart from the Supreme? How can you have self-realization without God-realization? Or how could you have God-realization without self-realization? Prabhupada's example is, how can you see your face in the mirror when there's no light? To see yourself and to see the sun, they're simultaneous. Even if you have a nice reflecting surface. Self-realization and God-realization are simultaneously, like the rising of the sun. It may be gradual. The rising of the sun is gradual. But you see yourself and you see the sun at the same time. Not separately. So, he goes through in the purport karma kanda, we've mentioned jnana kanda, they want knowledge, and so they approach the Vedas and they get knowledge. But what's the fruit of that knowledge? It's already been mentioned, the true intellectual, the fully accomplished intellectual surrenders unto the personality of Godhead. Bahunam Jamanamante Jnanavan Mam Prapadyante. Those who are, after many, many births of pursuing knowledge, cultivation of knowledge, Jnan, when one finally comes to the position of perfection of that path of Jnan, they surrender to the personality of Godhead. Because they understand Vasudev Sarvamiti. Krishna is everything. So there are these processes, a little softer would be to call them indirect. Also softer would be to say they're progressive steps towards, which is true, both of those are true, progressive steps towards the conclusion. So someone may not be able to go right to the conclusion. They may need to process the intermediate steps. That's okay. As they're doing so, they should be reminded, the Bhagavatam is reminding, that's not the whole thing. The whole thing is, what's the goal? Surrender to the personality of Godhead. So by the path of karma, the path of jnana, and the path of mystic yoga, the detour or the distraction is mystic cities. I want to enjoy, I want knowledge, I want mystic cities, instead of what does Krishna want? So that which entices one or encourages one to not come to the conclusion but seek religiously the fulfillment of karma, jnana, and yoga, that's pretension or cheating, or it's a incomplete conception. But there's a consequence of incomplete conception. One gets cheated of, you know, what the real capacity of this human life is, what the real fruit of the Vedas is, what the real interest of the self is. And so only those, the statement is, only those who are above all pretension realize the personality of Godhead. Flip it around and it says, by the process of bhakti only is the personality of Godhead understood. Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavan yasikchasmi tatvataha. The other process is nice, and especially nice if they lead one to bhakti, but it's only through bhakti that one can realize the personality of Godhead. Similar message, almost, you know, just expressed in different language in Bhagavad Gita. But this is the graduate study of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and so it's much more the understanding is expanded more fully by a very expert Jugadev Goswami. The Paramatma feature is within the heart of every living being. Those who are self-realized accept Paramatma as their Lord. Those who are above pretension know the Lord. So like, supposing somebody is engaged in a process that's to get them to meditate upon Paramatma. There can be a falling short of what meditation upon Paramatma can bring one to. It can be, by meditation upon Paramatma I get powers. By meditation upon Paramatma I can make the mistake of thinking, aha, I am Paramatma. Although Prabhupada has described that's what impersonalists do. There's an obvious discrepancy. If you're perceiving Paramatma, then there's the perceiver and the perceived. but because of their strong ambition to become one with the Supreme, seeing Paramatmaha, that's who I am. I am the Supreme. Or at least that's their, like, their aspiration, their excitement. So meditation upon or acknowledging the existence of Paramatma, good, but it's not sufficient, is the message. What, so just like in Kapila Dev's teachings found in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, he's teaching the Yuga Dharma, the process of the age of Satya, is meditation. So what's the purpose of meditation? Meditation upon the Supreme Soul. What's the purpose of meditation upon the Supreme Soul, according to what Kapila Dev teaches? In a state of trance, when the soul is perceiving the Supreme Soul, then what do? You engage in service to the Supreme Soul. That's Kapila Dev's teaching. Not just a state of neutrality, where there's you and there's the Super Soul and you're stunned. But go beyond being stunned. Awe and reverence, you go into, on a spiritual plane, serve the Supreme Lord. So we can do the same thing presently. Of course, it certainly requires manmana, thinking of Krishna. Bhavavad bhakto, becoming his devotee. Through engaging our senses in practical activity of serving the senses of Rishikesh, the senses become pure, the mind thinking of the Supreme Lord, the mind becomes pure, our heart becomes pure, our soul becomes awakened, and in that state one can go on serving the Personality and Godhead unlimitedly in this life and beyond this life. That's the process that Shukadeva Goswami is presenting here, and he's encouraging us to go beyond pretension. Just some thoughts on what is this. He's chosen this word for some reason. Deception is another word that could be used, and there are different kinds of deception. There's self-deception as well as deceiving other people. So deceiving other people is, I say one thing and I mean another thing. I trick another person. Here's a diamond, but it's not a diamond. Broken glass or plastic. Something. The rice merchant mixes pebbles with rice and buys something that weighs so many kilos, only it's, you know, some percentage of that is just rocks. So that's cheating. But same if one says, here's the message of the Vedas, and it's not the pure message of, yes, it's from the Vedas, but then there's other things mixed. So that's other deception. But then there's self-deception. Self-deception has also many varieties. To get beyond self-deception, so another way of looking at what this gatya vilika is where one has genuinely attained the qualities of purity, where there's genuine humility and genuine sincerity and genuine submission beyond pretension. I'm not deceiving others, I'm not deceiving myself. Genuinely possessing qualities. But the main theme that's being presented here is where it's selflessness that's consummate, or not activity in relation to the Supreme with a little hidden agenda or very obvious agenda. I want karma, gyan, and siddhis. So as long as there's selfishness or tainted with selfishness, that's the meaning that Prabhupada is rendering here, or our acharyas are rendering here as well, is shelter other than the personality and Godhead is pretension. Selfishness mixed with godliness. So that's, how do we get to selflessness? I was having a discussion with, I mentioned this yesterday actually, having a discussion with one devotee about not abandoning themselves, but trying to, recall the discussion yesterday. I've lived my life with just acting out the expectations of others. Others expect me to be like this, so I'd be like this. Some want me to be like that, so I'd be like that. Just fulfilling the expectations of other people. But meanwhile, who I am, I've abandoned who I really am, so I want to discover who I really am. I want to find out the things I like and I want, and gifts that God has given me, and exercise them, not just be the instrument of vicarious happiness for other people who want me to be what they weren't. Something like that. But that's another illusion, another self-delusion, because that's not who we are. We're not, I want something material. That's a passing phase of the flickering mind. Just like, you're choosing through your academic work, you're choosing a career path for yourselves. But that's not who you are. It's something that practically needs to be done because of, we have these material bodies and have material minds, and we need to take care of things. That's not self-identity. I'm an engineer, I'm a software designer, I'm a whatever it is, taxi driver, an accountant, and a baker, and that's who I am. Not who we are. Who are we? The processes mentioned from the Vedas, they're valid processes to help us reach the self, but the really reaching the self is to come to this conclusion. The real self is, I'm Krishna's eternal servant. Here's how Prabhupada writes it. The devotees of the Lord do not want anything for self-satisfaction. They only want to serve the Lord because the Lord is great. And as living entities, they are eternally subordinate, part and parcels of the Lord. This perfect realization of the self by the devotee helps them to become desireless. That is, to desire nothing for his personal self, and thus the devotees are called nishkami, without any desire. So this is this selflessness, without any self-interest or desire, but with the desire to serve the Supreme. And that's our constitutional position, and that's the position of no pretension. It's self-delusion. Starts with self-delusion. Is my happiness is something else apart from the Supreme. the undeluded person and the non-pretentious person understands my real happiness is fully in relation to the Supreme, and that's who I am. Now, I can take who I am and I can be an engineer, or I can be a doctor, or I can be this or that for the pleasure of the Supreme. Otherwise, it's a disconnect from who I am. And that's pretension. In the name of, this is who I am. And it's pervasive in this kingdom of Maya. People think who they are entirely in terms of their material activity. I am of this nation because I was born in this nation. I am of this profession because I invested so much energy in this profession. I am the family member of this family because my body has identified itself with that body. And so on. So, those activities are not wrong, but the identification is wrong. The consciousness is wrong. It's taken one away from one's real self-interest. And that's under the name of selfishness. But it's really not selfishness. It's self-harm. A living entity in its constitutional position cannot be void of all desires. But the nishkami, so the soul has desire. So in the self-realized state, the soul has desire. But the soul has desire in relation to the Supreme Soul. The nishkami devotees of the Lord desire everything for the satisfaction of the Lord. But what's their mood? They're desiring everything for the satisfaction of the Lord. But they're completely dependent on the orders of the Lord and are always ready to discharge their duty for the satisfaction of the Lord. That's this gatavyalikai. No pretension. I know who I am, and I know who He is, and I know that whatever it is that I have, my intelligence, my speaking power, walking power, power of locomotion, ability to breathe, the ability to blink my eyelids, you know, involuntary and voluntary acts. I'm dependent. That's who I am. That's the reality. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. That's the reality. And so, let me serve Him with every breath, with every step, with every thought, with every word. That's high. But, you know, that's where there's God realization to be found. And that's where happiness is to be found. And that's where realizing the self is to be found. So, Bhagavatam is encouraging us to go there, step by step. A concluding point. Two. Concluding points. The example of Brahma and Lord Shiva are specifically cited here because Brahmaji, Lord Shiva, Lakshmiji, and the four Kumaras are the leaders of four desireless Vaishnava Sampradayas. They are freed of all pretensions. You're aware there are four, according to Padma Purana, are four bona fide sampradayas headed by each of these four personalities. And because of their full surrender to the personality of Godhead, or in this language, because they're freed from all pretensions, they and others who are freed from all pretensions have accepted the personality of Godhead as their Lord and Master. And thus they have self-realization. The conclusion is, therefore, that the Lord is for everyone. Going back to the verse yesterday evening, the Lord is for everyone. Regardless of culture, background, birth, the Lord is for everyone. Because no one can achieve the result of his respective desires without his sanction. He's the shelter. He is the bhokta of all yajñas, and therefore he dispenses whatever is beneficial to come from the yajñas. But, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 8:9, by the Lord, all such results are awarded by him only. For the Lord is Adishvara, which is in this verse. He's the Adishvara of the self-realized. He's the original controller of everyone, namely the Vedantist, the great Karmakandiyas, the great religious leaders, the great performers of austerity, and all that are striving for spiritual advancement. So he is in that position for everyone, but he's not realized as being in that position except for the devotee. They may give lip service to it, but to realize that's the Bhagavatam is inviting us, preparing us to realize the personality of God, and his position in relation to us and our position in relation to him. He's our Lord and Master, and we're his servant. But ultimately he's realized by the pretensionless devotees only. Therefore, special stress is given to the devotional service of the Lord by Srila Shukadeva Goswami. Bhagavatam is wonderful. Bhagavad Gita is also wonderful. But the Bhagavatam takes the understandings of Bhagavad Gita, and in poetic language and in very refined, exquisitely beautiful explanations, helps us to understand even better those understandings found in Bhagavad Gita. Gata Fialika, those who are beyond pretension, can realize he who is the Lord of everybody. Including he who is the Lord of processes of self-realization, and those that are practicing the processes of self-realization, they can realize him. Bhagavatam's powerful. Any discussion?
The understanding that we are the eternal servant of Krishna, we have the theoretical understanding of that, and at no point we seem to be challenging that, at least in the conscious way.
Yeah.
But the extent to which I would actually be able to act on that depends on how much purification we have gone through. So will that stage still be called as pretentious? Because the other things, many times when we do fail in acting on this platform.
Nice question. What Rupa Goswami's teaching would indicate to us is that no. That is to say, take the metaphor of a seed that then is nurtured into a sprout. and the sprout continues to grow and becomes a plant, and the plant produces some flowers, and the plant produces some fruits. And so the immature stage is just an immature stage of the mature stage, because it's being properly cultivated. Or when it is being properly cultivated, then we can make that statement. It's just an earlier stage of the same thing. So the real criterion here is two things: that there's proper guidance or instruction or knowledge or knowing what's what, training, so we know what's what and we stay with it. And then the second thing is that there's not some resentment toward Krishna, or say it in the positive sense, there's the acceptance of Krishna's position, and I don't have any resistance to that. Although there's the conditioning that says I want to enjoy apart from Krishna. I mean, it's not pretentious if we acknowledge in a humble way we're cultivating and genuinely aspiring for the transcendental position, because this other stuff is not who I am, although that other stuff may be going on. In a residual way, if we're following the path of Rupa Goswami, then sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti are all there's just different stages of uttam bhakti. If we have we follow Rupa Goswami's teachings and have no resentment towards the goal, we actually aspire for the goal. That is uttam bhakti. And through uttam bhakti one can realize Krishna. Not pretension. If we have the teachings of Rupa Goswami given and we accept them and we're cultivating accordingly. Anything else?
I think they could tell you about dependence on Krishna. Very difficult, and most of the time, I do think wherever I am conversant with, I don't depend, I just do them. And those which are tough to do, I may pray, but or actually we want to avoid doing those things and be lazy about them.
Both of those conditions are due to spiritual laziness. It's not just, you know, this behind the material lazy is the spiritually lazy. The eagerness for deriving, it's like it's fruitive mentality, deriving some happiness from fruitive work. Very strong. It's not just out there in Karmi land, it's in our own hearts. It's very strong. Strong tendency. So determined. Hold on. Very strong. So it takes conscientious effort. this isn't the same as conscientious effort. And something like Bhakti Saranga's question yesterday about why people think a certain way, this person who gave up his occupation and position and recognition and status and was appreciated by everybody as a great spiritual person for letting go of that and taking some kind of other path or elevation, spiritual elevation. That's a common conception, that renouncing things means you're spiritual. It's also a very common thing that people import their fruitive tendencies into the arena of spiritual activity. You know, take their baggage and their dirty laundry with them right into the arena of sacrifice. They don't want to let go. Like the tenth offense against the chanting of the holy name, not having complete faith in the chanting of the holy name, instead maintaining material desires. Even after understanding so many instructions. So it's this fruitive tendency is very strong. With so many tricks and justifications. You know, I deserve it. But it's I see it as spiritual laziness. We're ready to do some work, but not brahminical work. And this is brahminical work. We'll do the other work because there's some perks. These, you know, ones that look like perks to us. And the other ones don't look like perks. Looks like, you know, a hassle. But one who's brahminical, or one who's in the mode of goodness, what they're striving for is purity. And whatever it takes, just like from the materialist, whatever it takes to get money, he's ready to do it. For the brahmana, whatever it takes to get purity, he's ready to do it. What is it? I'm ready to do it. But we're, you know, captured by another mode. We're lazy. We like fruitive activity. We like, you know, getting something temporary. Very strong. Very strong. Just the good news is Krishna helps. And especially Krishna helps those who try to help themselves. Prabhupada taught us that God helps those who help themselves. There's this saying. It's not to be done with a selfish motive. I'll do something and Krishna will, you know, I'll do 10%, Krishna will do 90%. But it's a fact. Krishna is very loving and very kind, and when he sees a sincere effort, then he'll help. And if it's pretentious, it's not a sincere effort, it's just a show effort, Krishna knows, and Krishna helps us to maintain the show. Self-delude and delude others. So the consideration, as I mentioned, is non-pretension, is that there's real sincerity, there's real humility. And if you approach with that, just as note the comment that you made. It's humbling to make such statements. But then real humility is you roll up your sleeves and you apply yourself and you call out to Krishna. Not just when the going is tough, but feeling yourself dependent. I found it very inspiring to read Shukadeva Goswami's consideration. My dear Lord, please give me the capacity to answer Maharaj Pariksit's question in such a way that he will understand it. Just dependent on something he already knew how to do. It's not circumstantial, it's a mood of service, of humble service. That's unpretentious. So cultivate, Krishna will help. And the message of the Bhagavatam is a very strong medicine to help us get there. Huh? Mm-hmm. Anything else? Yeah.
It's not directly related to today's lecture, but in general theme, like we're talking about creation.
So
I was just I remember like there was something in the first canto that talks about creation and what actually happens at the end of Kali Yuga?
What happens at the end of Kali Yuga?
Yeah.
At the end of Kali Yuga, Kalki Avatar comes and cleans up. He eliminates all the degraded people. Liberates them. Eliminates them and liberates them. And that brings the close to Kali Yuga and Satya Yuga begins. The perfected souls who have no interest at all in involving themselves in Kali Yuga affairs, they're existing in a higher dimension and they descend from that higher dimension and begin Satya Yuga. Once again.
So the people who all those degraded people, they get liberated now.
Liberated. Very generous. So, you could think, well, okay, I'll just hang around for 427,000 years. As long as I'm still in the human form of life, although there's no guarantee, then I'll also get liberated. And no sweat, I just have to somehow manage to get a human form of life. But that's not guaranteed.
To the other living entities, what happens
to
them?
Well, it doesn't give a description of what happens to those other living entities. Those that Kalki Avatar kills, that's the humans, or whatever, pygmy-sized humans. Cannibalistic, pygmy-sized humans get liberated.
What does it actually mean, like, to be back to Godhead? I'm trying to understand that in the concept of yesterday's like talk.
Well, to back to Godhead literally means Goloka Vrindavan, but it also means consciousness. Because when you're in proper consciousness, you're with Krishna.
Because I was thinking of those lines, I don't have realization, but when we say that there is a complete whole, like Krishna is present as a complete whole with every living entity. If one can realize that, then he's as good as being in back to God.
That's right. That's right. A pure devotee is always with Krishna. That's back to Godhead. So it's not a place, a 3-hour drive away or something. Or, long plane right away. It's consciousness. And with consciousness, that place becomes Vaikuntha. That place becomes the kingdom of God. That's also stated in the Bhagavatam. those who have such consciousness, they themselves are places of pilgrimage, because by their consciousness they sanctify even places of pilgrimage. But at the same time, it's a spiritual place. But the main thing to consider is the consciousness, because the consciousness gives you access to that spiritual place. The spiritual place is instantly present, but at the same time it's far away because of consciousness.
And one final question in the same part of lines. I mean, I asked about Prabhupada, and it was like inconceivable at that time. And I mean, I just want to understand.
Probably still is.
I mean, like, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that, like, if one goes back to God and internet comes back, so in the same process, if the souls keep going back, so there should be some end to the material world, and everybody should be in the spiritual world.
Why should everybody be in the spiritual world? Why do you conclude that?
Because, like, there's nobody coming back. Because if one soon...
Oh, okay. Well, how many living entities are there?
I know it's, like, uncountable but finite.
Okay, uncountable but finite. Prabhupada has explained, those that are returning, they never come back, but there's always souls that are coming. And how do you count, you know, well, you can do a mathematical statement and say, well, based on that understanding, eventually all living entities will have, you know, done their rotation here and then go back, and then you run out because it's a finite number. That's what, you know, but it's a finite number but uncountable. Oh. An uncountable number is a large number. That's an uncountable number. And so you can't measure that with time or any other kind of yardsticks. Anything?
You were talking about realizing that Krishna is supreme. So, is it on practical plane where I work that Krishna is my like master?
Yes.
Is it also that realizing?
Who's the master of your master? You know, when you're in your workplace, you have a boss. Who is his master? He's got somebody, and he's got somebody, he's got somebody, and Krishna's the master of all. So you can think like that. This fellow here thinks he's my boss. Krishna is my boss. As Krishna is the boss of this guy. Krishna is the boss of everybody. He's my boss and he's his boss. We're all Krishna's servants. He doesn't know it. He's got another set of rules going on, called the rule of illusion. But, you know, that's okay. But I'll carry the consciousness that while I'm, you know, taking the workload that he's passing on and executing it, I'm doing it for Krishna. Where does everything come from? And this isn't just a mental adjustment. In course of time, it's a matter of realization. It's challenging, but, you know, life's filled with challenges.
Is it understanding, like, how? I mean, having theoretical understanding of how Krishna is the supreme.
But beyond the theoretical understanding of how Krishna is the supreme. Is okay, what's the implication here? Yeah, well, yeah. And, you know, the workplace, my ability, my intelligence, my capacity, my health, my welfare, my car, you know, to get from here to there, my, you know, ability to focus my mind. This is all under Krishna's jurisdiction. He's my master. I don't mind serving this fellow also. Krishna is my master.
So is this beyond just having faith in...
Yes. It's beyond theoretical knowledge. It's beyond just having faith. You know, but that's what we're talking about. What you're probing here is how to be in Krishna consciousness in worldly situations. It's one thing sitting here having a Bhagavatam class, thinking very nicely about these things, and then you get up and walk out, and you know, another part of life begins, and it becomes secularism, where God just disappears. And we're very accustomed to that. But, you know, the Bhagavatam doesn't teach secularism. He's the Lord in all circumstances, not just during Bhagavatam class or during prasadam or while performing arti or chanting a japa. He's the Lord of all circumstances. So how do we realize that? It's, yes, it's more than a matter of faith. Faith is required, knowledge is required, submission is required, cultivation is required, and you know, you do those things sincerely, Krishna will help you. Alright, that's good. Okay. It's cultivation. At this stage, it's the understanding is probably primarily theoretical. So then, what the most important thing to do is practical application. Now consider the things that we've just discussed just now and previously, and think, okay, how can I apply this? And then apply it. Like the appreciation of Maharaj Pariksit of Shukadeva Goswami, you not only learn it, but you realize everything. You not only realize everything, but you're living it. And in the life of pure devotion. And not only you're living it in the life of pure devotion, but the Lord, because of that pure devotion, He's lifted you up to practically being equal to Him. So, theoretical understanding followed with practical application. So then, through practical application, you get realization. You understand that one? Here's a worldly example. Your life is going along just fine, and some ailment comes. Whatever, something that you never had before, and you don't really know how to deal with the thing. So then, what do? You want to find a doctor. Well, there's so many doctors. Which doctor should you go to? You ask some people, you know any doctors that are good in this field? So, you have to, it's a question of faith. The faith enough to go to Dr. X instead of the other people. Maybe you go to three doctors and you sit to those three doctors and you resonate very well with this person. So there's faith. Faith enough that you'll go ahead and take the prescription that he's given you and follow the diet that he's given you and you do it. And if it's the proper physician and good medicine, the right diet, you'll get well. with faith, you get some theoretical knowledge. The theoretical knowledge, you apply it. Assuming that theoretical knowledge is accurate, you get some realization. Well, I feel better. This ailment is going away. By acting in knowledge, one gains in realization. Then you're ready to go back to the doctor for other stuff. Because by acting in knowledge, faith increases. So, yes, it's a matter of faith, but it's more than a matter of faith. It's we have to practically apply. I like this comment over here. Yeah, I practically reply when I get, you know, I have a hard time. I pray and I depend on Krishna. But the practical application should be broader than that. And with that practical application, your faith will be nurtured. Your devotion will get stronger in spiritual practice. So that's not something that somebody else can do for you. It's something that you have to do. But you do so, you act in knowledge, and increases your faith and your devotion. So you have knowledge, realization, greater faith and devotion, then Krishna's the direct experience that Krishna lifts you up. That's a nice feeling. But unless you go through 1, 2, and 3, you're not going to experience 4. Because you get your back to Krishna thinking, I'll figure it out. I'm smart. Everybody tells me I'm smart. I believe I'm smart. I'll figure it out. Without the sense of depending upon Krishna. We stay in that self-delusion. We're not independent from Krishna. We can't do the singlest darn thing. Nothing. We can exist. That's about it. We exist as spirit soul. But otherwise, we're dependent upon Krishna. Even the existence of the spirit soul is ultimately dependent upon Krishna. But I can, it's eternal, so I don't have to worry. I can just ignore Krishna and I still exist. Some satisfaction. We can do something in self-delusion. Yeah, I'm gonna realize my desires for happiness. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.